Welcome to Synthaholics. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me is Aaron O'Brien. We have two special guests that we spoke about last week. We've got Team Trekyards, we've got Captain Foley and Commander Cockings. Welcome to the podcast, guys.
Thank you for having us. It's always a pleasure to be invited to a podcast, and you guys are awesome, so thank you for having us. Well, me back. This is Samuel's first time.
I was about to say that, Stuart. Yeah, first time. I guess go easy on me, but we do our own podcast, so maybe we'll go easy on you. Maybe that'll be cool.
Touche.
Please do.
So we're here. Go ahead, Aaron.
No. Go ahead.
So I was going to say we're here to kind of look back at Discovery. We've seen all the episodes. Trekyards has done a tremendous amount of content diving into all the minutiae of Star Trek Discovery. They've done their own reviews. They jump into the ships and everything. We've been covering every single episode of Discovery here in Synthaholics podcast. And so we're just excited to be able to have like a roundtable discussion with four of us so we can all talk about what we thought and felt about Star Trek Discovery Season 1.
Yeah. it's a loaded subject.
Loaded subject. So
a little bit, yeah.
Let's start with you guys. In case any of our listeners haven't seen Trekyards or heard any of your thoughts, what did you guys think of the first season of Discovery, kind of looking back? Any standout moments, or did you feel like there were any missed opportunities?
Let's start with Samuel, since it's his first time on the show.
Samuel!
Gosh. I mean, overall, as with every Trek series in its first season, mixed bag. I think you could probably argue it was probably the best first season, bar TOS, obviously. But that was just, you know, quantity over quality. Quality over quantity. But, you know, mixed bag, some pretty bad writing, some pretty good writing, and gradual improvement, and, you know, certainly fun watching and fun reviewing.
Did you feel like they missed anything along the way, or did you think that they hit everything that they should have hit?
Well, they missed a ton, but it's not necessarily their fault. it wasn't what they intended, and they did a good job scrambling as they went. But I thought they hit a few good things. I mean, I love the Giorgio reveal staying. I love the the Enterprise at the end was great to see, and you know, a few nice things. And to be fair, come on, we all had fun speculating on the obvious plot twists, and then we got to still enjoy the moments when they were revealed. We were all like, yep, good job, guys. Exactly what was going to happen. Good job.
yeah. They did kind of telegraph all the little hidden things like five episodes ahead of time, and it wasn't a big surprise.
Yeah. I gotta say, they did, as Samuel said, they did do some good things. I mean, it started out being not so great, in my opinion. And they did kind of scramble, throw in a few nice things that, as nods to fans, was really nice. But like Samuel kind of pointed out in our one review, it's kind of like we have Stockholm Syndrome. We've been treated so poorly that when they do give us a little tidbit of something that should look the way it should look, we're like, oh my God, that's so amazing. Thank you guys.
Yeah. Like just, an abusive relationship, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. they definitely hit some good points for me, and it was an interesting season, an interesting ride, not the most well-written ride, I don't think, but it kind of came together in spots.
What's funny is it kind of makes you appreciate the J.J. Abrams trilogy, because when they started those, they set up the groundwork of this is the reboot. You know, this is what it is. And people loved it or hated it, but there was the distinction of what it was. This show, they went in with saying certain things, they broke certain things, they, you know, visually aren't consistent with what they're saying. You know, they should have been more upfront with the tagline, Star Trek Discovery, tagline, a visual reboot. Just far stronger up front, because that would have landed us a lot less of the discussion. Because, you know, as web guys ourselves, you know, we get so many comments from both sides of the fence. Shut up, of course it's a visual reboot. boo, they're so crappy for breaking canon, and we have to be in the middle because we see both sides, and it's a weirdly polarizing show because they weren't clear enough, and they're still not. And it kind of makes you appreciate JJ. You can appreciate or de-appreciate it for what it is. This is, as you said, a mixed bag.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, and that's actually the interesting thing. So, does a visual reboot mean a complete reboot, or just like you're saying, it's just it needed to be a little, you know, a little remodel. That's all it needed, and maybe get to newer, younger viewers more interested in Star Trek again.
I think personally, it is just a visual reboot, not a canon reboot, because of the way the news is kind of leaked out before Discovery came out, because originally they were saying this is going to be an anthology series. And I remember reading something from Brian Fuller saying it needed to be a visual reboot so that the reason we're starting pre-TOS is so that when we make things different in TNG era, as, you know, on season 3 or 4, whenever they decided to get around to that era, if they were going to do a generational show like American Horror Story or something like that, that they needed to reset the look in TOS time so that they could iterate on it going forward.
But the problem with a prequel visual reboot is that are you actually retconning or are you visually rebooting? They're distinctly different things. If you're retconning, and now that there are holograms in that time, then you're saying TOS didn't exist because holograms and all those L-cars. So visual reboot or retcon. The Enterprise, like we saw, is that now, every single time we see it in every other show, that's a lie? And everything we've had 50 years, or you guys have had 50 years, is a lie? Or is it a visual reboot where we can have it separated? Because there's a canon, you know? Yeah, and they made it really complicated for themselves.
Yeah, it's a great point, because the thing is, like, there's very few franchises that of sci-fi that is old and as viable as Star Trek. I mean, the only other one I can think of is Doctor Who.
Well, that's had, you know, 27 visual reboots. There's nothing that's had one consistent look for the most part.
Right, but the cool thing about Doctor Who is that you can sort of just say, well, you know, the TARDIS, you know, reinvented its, or whatever it does, it redesigns itself.
Sure.
Yeah, and, you know, the Doctor regenerates, and so you can kind of redo the whole thing over and over again. Star Trek's not so much that way. I mean, what we got in TOS was reflected in every series until now. So, and we still haven't seen the interior of the ship, but still... I mean, it does make you go, like, did they paint themselves into a corner here? Or are we just going to just say, hey, you know, we got to spice it up for, you know, the young people, you know? So I think that's the biggest thing for me, is the reason why they're doing it is they have to bring in younger people, new blood into it. Because a lot of times new blood will come into, you know, TOS or Next Generation and go, like, I can't get into this. It's just, it looks so corny to me, you know, because it's an older show. And
the problem, though, is that TOS is mostly about the stories.
Oh, yeah.
Nowadays, it can't rely on the visuals. It's about the stories. And even, you know, I literally watched an interview with Jason Isaacs, and he said he resonated towards the stories on TOS, not anything else so much, the stories.
Oh, absolutely.
So if a modern person, modern youth, says, well, TOS looks so corny, they can't even enjoy the stories, well, maybe it's not the show for them. I'm not saying it shouldn't be. But if everyone's so based on visuals, then, you know, you'll enjoy other stuff maybe more. Maybe you're not ready for that deeper storytelling, but as you get older, maybe you will be.
Well, that's true. But that's my only argument, why it would just be a purely visual, and maybe they just go forward as a complete new visual. And from here on, from TOS and forward, we're like, yes, that all happened, but it probably looked differently, you know?
Mm-hmm. So yeah. I kind of wish they would just say this is Prime Timeline version 2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like we're gonna keep all the stories separate, but something happened visually that split the timeline.
Or it's just alternate Prime 2018.
Yeah,
this is just a modern retelling story. Stories that happened before with modern technology, and all that stuff we saw for 50 years was all through a filter. It's like looking at a black and white photo. Yeah, it's great, but then you want to colorize that, you know,
it's just a shame that when you give the keys to the car to somebody, if they go ahead and drive it if a family's looked after, I mean, Stuart's got an old car, if you look after a car for 30 years, give it to your son or your cousin, you sell it to them, and they drive it into a lake, well, all the work the previous guys have done has been wasted. You know, 50 years of people trying to keep this thing consistent, and then just because the certain guy to get control now decides, nah, You know what I mean? It's such a shame that anyone can... It's like with episode 8. The worst thing is how they treat Luke. And it's like, well, now that's canon. Because they gave the wrong guy the keys.
Absolutely. Story. I totally agree with you on that.
Well, no.
Now it's canon, ruined.
And you guys both... Oh, man, those are two excellent points. So,
I'd love to talk with you guys about episode 8 sometime.
But Samuel, that was a great point. And also Stuart, that's a great point too. Like you were saying, like maybe it's just the filter, like you're saying, you see an old black and white photo or maybe an old lithograph or something like that. You know, it's all the things were still there, but they just look different because you're seeing it through a certain lens. Mm-hmm. That's a fascinating way to look at it too.
We said that at the start, we called it out, you know, make it look the same from a distance. So visually, you know, a tricorder is a tricorder, but as soon as you get close, boom, touchscreen, boom, all these extra things, which is what the Connie did. That's the amazing thing about the Enterprise. If from afar, it looks amazingly identical. Get close, ton of differences. That, if that was how they did everything, would have been better.
Right. Yeah. Those are really wonderful points there. Very, very thought provoking.
Well, speaking of like the whole visual reboot thing, the Klingons.
Uh-oh.
Obviously a visual reboot. It feels like it was almost obvious that, okay, the reason, like 90% of the reason the makeup was so changed is so that they could cover up Shazad Latif and make him unrecognizable for whenever he becomes Tyler. But then if they're going to go through the trouble of doing that, why did they telegraph that so hard? It's like you should have just done regular Klingon makeup if you're going to telegraph it that hard.
Yeah, and if that's the reason for doing the makeup, that's ridiculous. Just hire a different actor to have him play the Klingon role. You know? I mean, how far out of the box is that?
Yeah.
Seriously.
I agree. Yeah. That makes perfect sense. I don't know. And for the Klingon changes, I mean, there's so much... I mean, there's people that are accepting of it, but there's a lot of hate of it, too. And that's still the visual thing that I think that goes into the fan has this visceral reaction or this like, oh, well, we're cool with it. We'll roll with it. So do you think that when they were making all these decisions and changes that they understood the weight of what they were, you know, that they were juggling this, you know?
Well, can I jump back 1 second to that point? You know, Star Trek is only here because of the fans, because they wrote a letter writing campaign to get season 2 and season 3, because they had enough pull in reruns to get a movie, because they had enough ratings on the movie to get a series, because they had enough series ratings to get a spin-off. Mm-hmm. Star Trek is only here because we support, well, you guys, I wasn't born, but only here because we supported it. And those people are still alive and not senile yet and still supporting and still putting money in. It's the only reason.
And the only reason CBS Access is there.
Absolutely, because I said to previous people, those who love the 3 J.J. Abrams films, haven't seen TOS or whatever, would not pay money a month to see a new show of a... You know what I mean? If obviously, it's on Netflix for the rest of the world, so okay, they would just watch it, but they wouldn't pay an original fee. It's only old Trek fans.
Yeah.
And so it's like the fans have got you here, and at the 50-year mark, you say, eh.
Yeah, that's a good point, because if you're just going to dump on the audience or the fans, and they're the ones holding the whole table up.
Well, that's kind of what happened with Enterprise. They kind of stepped a little too far out of the box as far as established canon went, and the fans didn't react well to it.
Also, prequel, wrong direction.
Exactly. And pulling in the Zindi story arc, that's where I tuned out. You know, season 3, I just tuned right out of Enterprise. And I'm one of those people that's responsible probably for it not making it past the 4th season. And I feel bad about that now because I go back and watch it, and that's some great storytelling.
Season 3 is serialized storytelling done properly. Yeah, I wish Discovery had been as good as season 3 of Enterprise. Seriously. Yeah.
Or seasons 4 through 9, or seasons 4 through 7 of DS9.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
But that's what I'm saying. Once Enterprise came around and they started messing with things that were pretty much established in the fans' eyes, or their minds anyway, their own side canon, head canon, if you will, that's when people kind of tuned out. And it shows, because that's the show that got canceled. TNG, they moved to another era. They move on. Don't go back. Don't try to shoehorn something in where it doesn't belong.
Or you can, for like a webisode, a miniseries, a six-part arc, something small, fun. Yeah. Just cool. You know, don't make it a core thing, for sure.
Yeah, and the new producers, of course, they want their name emblazoned on this. They want to change things so that it's, you know, that's mine. I made it look different. you can't do that and shoehorn it into the established timeline without the fans kind of getting a little jittery. And that's, I think, what happened with Enterprise. So they should have learned from that and gone, like, as Samuel and myself have said, if you went post-Voyager with everything we've seen in Discovery, nobody would have batted an eye.
It would have been amazing.
This is a rogue Klingon sect, an ancient Klingon culture or a cult that came about. Yeah, it all rolls together. Even the differences in how they look would, you know, could be explained.
I mean, the whole racist Klingons purity thing, I've never understood that from the early days of this season, because they've had 100 years of isolation with us. At no point has there been a sense of, we want to make them part of the Federation. That hasn't come up yet. So it makes no sense in this era for that to be the justification for a war. Post-Voyager, you've had several peace treaties. You've had post-many more where we've all come together. You've got Worf and other people. You know, Worf, I'm sure, as a diplomat, would cause other people to join the Federation and stuff. That is the time, 200 years later.
That's the homogenization that Laurel was talking about.
And then, everything would work for the most part to go. Even the radical, like, Crossfield class, because you've had so many random designs in Star Trek history, you could say, it's post and in Spore Drive. Okay, cool, we invented this even more powerful. We've got Slipstream, but guess what? This is faster. You know? It's strange how they put themselves in a weird place. Now, as I said before to Stuart, obviously, on the show, I'm glad they didn't go post-Voyager, because once they canonized something that was wrong and stupid and not what we want... Damn, like episode 8, we've now ruined that part of the timeline, sort of. Not, you know what I mean? Ruined inverted commas. So I'm kind of glad at least we can retcon out their discovery from the past. But if they head it to the future, that's the future. So mixed bag. But yeah, I just think the story would have been so much better in post-Voyager. Even just the story, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point.
I just kind of wanted to jump back to your point earlier, Samuel. You were talking about how that we the fans kept Star Trek alive. We paid for it. We did this. We did that. Star Trek was dormant for 15 years. CBS saw all the money we were throwing at fan films because we wanted more Star Trek, and so I think they took advantage of that. It's like, oh, they gave $1 million to Axanar. They gave, you know, thousands and thousands to other Star Trek kickstarted, Indiegogo, fan-produced series. It's like, well, if they're getting all that money, why don't we just cash in on that? And I feel like that's kind of, it was kind of like a just the perfect storm of no Star Trek. And the reason, I feel like a reason 90% of these fan films popped up is because there was no Star Trek to fill that void.
Yeah, it was a drought.
So it was like a perfect storm of, like, people are giving money to these Kickstarters, and then now CBS can shut them all down and be like, give money to us now for more Star Trek.
Well, piggybacking on that as well, I mean, I'd love to hear, you know, Stuart and Samuel, your thoughts on this. Is the if this is, you know, obviously all these are all the facts, and like Samuel said that, you know, we everything is built off the fans. Do the fans that are disgruntled and angry at Discovery, is it fair for them to be that angry, or do you think they should get over it? Or, I mean, obviously everyone has their own personal feelings, but I'm asking both of you. I mean, like, we just as much as you guys see both sides, these people loving Discovery, we see people just hating Discovery. And, it's very controversial sometimes even talking about Discovery to certain fans. So are they right? Are they wrong? Should they just get over it or what?
Oh, that's a great question. See, I was opposed to JJ Trek was kind of not true. I mean, I saw it 7 times in the theater. I really enjoyed it the first
time. And that blew me away. First time I heard that from you.
I was never a fan of the Enterprise. I mean, that's my favorite character in Star Trek, and I think they really mistreated her in the JJ timeline. I think the one that we saw in Discovery, that would have been a perfect reboot, a reimagining for JJ's. That would have been beautiful. And I would have had no problems with that. Mm-hmm. But it's Star Trek. I own all the JJ movies. I'm not a hugest fan of them, but I own them all. I will support Star Trek regardless of any iteration.
And especially if it's an alternate timeline that you can have in your little box. That kind of helps.
Yeah,
In retrospect, that actually helps. And especially Beyond, when it was actually a good movie and damn good reference written. Yes. That got a lot of respect out of me.
Yeah, that's my favorite of the JJ films.
So yeah, I think fans need to step back a little bit and realize that, you know, you need to draw new fans in. I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of everything JJ. I'm not the biggest fan of everything Discovery. not the biggest fan of the first three seasons of Deep Space Nine, but it's my favorite series.
First three seasons are really rough.
It is what it is. And all Star Trek, as Samuel and I like to point out, all Star Trek has its flaws and its hiccups and its missteps. And I mean, the internet wasn't really around when TNG came out, but the fans were writing, you saw articles saying that, you know, this isn't Kirk and Spock. I'm never going to watch it. It's going to be crap. It's not my Star Trek. Well, guess what? It's a new era. We just hear it on a more regular basis because of the internet now. Yeah. The same thing happened with TNG, and a lot of those fans that hated it, I think probably embraced it at least, or are now huge fans of it. So, and the people that hate it the most, Discovery, are the ones sitting in their closet watching every episode so they can nitpick it.
Yeah.
You know, people that love you watch you some of the time. The people that hate you watch you every second so they can dissect everything you say. So they're your biggest fans because they see every second of your storytelling or your presence.
That's a really crazy thing, but you're right. I think that's exactly what people do. It's bizarre. Mm-hmm. It's bizarre. How about you, Samuel? Do people? What would you message the people who love, hate, the extreme of all that?
Well, I think I must be quite an unusual person that I feel like I'm in. Thanks, Stuart. He's nodding furiously. No, I think I'm so balanced. And I guess I've kind of trained myself through 3 and a bit years of Trek Yards. I mean, this is how we do our show. But I don't see any reason for the extreme vitriol on you know, you call the good, you call out the good, and you comment on the bad. As we always say on Trek Yards, you know, there's 3 ways of saying something. There's the, this is shit.
Yeah.
This is shit, you bleep, 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 get out and die. Or, I don't like this because I think this and this and this. Mm. Two don't mean it by doing this.
Yeah.
Two mean nothing. One, there's no point, whatever. But I don't like something, but, with a comment. That's worth a lot because you're adding something to the conversation. And I do not understand fans that will rant and ramble on, I hate this. We've obviously disagreed with things and we've expressed that opinion in a metered way, and as we try to, almost every time, we try to offer a solution to how they might fix it, you know, give them the benefit of doubt every step of the way, you know. Fans, obviously, I've known Trek since I was 2. It is so ingrained in my psyche that it's part of my life. Other fans, like Doug Drexler, it's also their psyche, but they've also had it for 50 years. I'm mid-20s, I double my entire life experience, you know, I can't even imagine that yet. So that, I can't exactly go to that perspective. But, you know, I just don't see the point in being so anti that you lose the point. It is a fictional television show. It might have some of the best morals of our, you know, of our universe. Be good to everyone. Be fair. Don't be a dick. You know, don't be racist Klingons. You know, don't be Discovery Klingons. But, you know, love it as much as you want. But I don't understand the hate. I don't like Discovery because, as far as you should go.
Yeah. And the truth of the matter is, as Samuel said, yeah, we don't like this. Here's the reason why, and here's how we would suggest maybe fixing it, you know, for the future, whatever, or how we would have done it. Like you said, it offers something to the conversation. Now, people that are so against something that they are just closed-minded, all of a sudden, it doesn't become about your argument. You've made your argument. You've suggested how to make it better. They don't have a leg to stand on, so they start attacking you personally.
Yeah.
We hear that all the time. You know, you see the insults turn around online. It's ridiculous, the fights that people get into in the comment threads.
Yeah.
Because they're attacking each other because they're all of a sudden their opinion doesn't hold any water because somebody else has a more valid opinion or actually represents their opinion in a better way. All of a sudden, oh, the opinion wasn't what we're talking about. You're a bad person now.
Yeah, right. And actually, and that's what I love about you guys, not just what you do with, you know, your show, but you know, you're fair about it. You will say, you'll call bullshit when you see bullshit, and then you'll say this is, or something is awesome, and you'll say something is awesome. And Stuart, more than once, I've seen you like shake your head like, I wouldn't have done that. You know, like, yeah, it's just no. And but I like that because you guys are fair minded, and we, I think me and Dave, as we go through all the shows and we've talked about it, we'd be like, you know, this is not the best episode, or they could have done this a little better or something, or this scene was lacking or something. There's been plenty of times like that, but there's been times that we were just blown away. We're like, this is a fantastic episode, or this is a fantastic scene. So,
you know what the joke is, though, is that the producers, they also know, the actors know, oh no, episode four, say, that was a weak episode. You know what I mean? Mm. The editors know that editing was a bit weak, or the writers know, as someone who's made fan films, damn, our budget ran out. Damn, it didn't have time to film. You know, these things happen. They had, you know, ridiculously massive rewrites, and they know that's as good as they could have done in the timeline they had.
Sure.
Yeah, and I'm not going to hold that against them. It's weak. Move on. You know, that's why I was so excited the last 6-7, and they were stronger. You know, they've been rushed, but hey, whatever. They know that too. That's why season 2, fan feedback, pre-existing sets, they made the budget go further, and consistent, coherent storytelling. You know, they can do so much with that. And like we said, Trek season 1 is never great. You know, although episodic at least gives you really strong single episodes. And of course, 22 episodes, always some gems in each season. This season, less gems because there's less episodes. And they're
And the storytelling just doesn't allow for that as well.
Yeah.
So I got a question for you guys. How many times were you watching Discovery and thought, what would Trek Yards do? Because a lot of people wait for our reviews and they're like, when is the review going up? When is the review going up? Because they want to hear our thoughts, and that really means a lot to us. Our reviews are generally longer than the actual episode.
Because we analyze them.
Because we analyze everything that happens.
Ours usually are too. I mean, you were on one, Stuart. So, I mean, we do like a, like a 15, 20, 30 minute breakdown, and then we just yak about it for like an hour. Just getting on to the nitty gritty. So, I mean, all of ours are at least like an hour and 20. Except for the first two episodes, we had to cram those into an hour because of time constraints.
Yeah, right. Well, and so going on all of this, you know, so the fan feedback and all this, when you see it, this, you know, obviously we've digested all season one. I have a couple caveats that I wish they would have hit. I think, obviously, visually, it's a beautiful season. The acting is really nice. Storytelling is a little wishy-washy. Sometimes it's great. Sometimes it sucks. Me personally, I would have liked to seen more exploration in real science instead of like crystal stuff and, you know, all that stuff. It kind of irked me that they kind of like glossed over real science. Did anything like that in the episodes, not just my points, but anything that you were like, why? Where is this in my Trek? What the things that I want to see more?
The biggest thing for me, and I've mentioned this since the beginning, I miss the beauty passes of the ship. I miss Captain's Log, Stardate, and the flyby of it in Warp. We don't get that with Discovery. The CGI budget is pretty much wasted. We only got a few good shots of those kind of flybys in the last episode.
Yeah. Well, that's the weird joke. This is the most expensive Trek show with the least episode, so the most budget for least episode, which is they got double, triple per episode, and it doesn't feel like the most expensive show. If you go back and watch Enterprise or Voyager, you know, ensemble piece, new aliens every week, lots of CG, I mean, obviously of the time budget, but it's like all these cool new things, especially Enterprise, they had, you know, a lot of production value in what they had.
Enterprise is amazing, like, production value.
Yeah, and it's like, where's the money going? And obviously, more name actors. That's going to chuck a lot of budget, and they can charge more, because guess what? If you want Jason Isaacs, he can charge Jason Isaacs, I didn't want to be in it at first cost, because that's what he said to them. They convinced him in, and I'm sure a paycheck helped. Standing sets, the detail, that's the only part I think that the budget really shows. The sets are great, but you don't see them enough. You don't, you know, there's depth of field, they run through them much, there's no beauty parser, like Stuart said, and obviously the details are so uncannily that as a fan, you're like, that's just a switch.
Yeah.
Whereas it also doesn't help other detail.
Also doesn't help that in space everything's either blue or hazy. Like the Enterprise reveal, it was like, oh my god, they're ruining it. I can't even see it through that blue cloud.
Yeah, space shots add a lot of budget. And someone does space shots, you know, you can do very cheaply, especially with modern render farms, my goodness. It feels almost like the least expensive Trek show, but it's had the most budget. I do not know where that's gone. I know, licensing
to Jason, you said it yourself, to Jason Isaacs' paycheck, probably for season one.
I don't know. I think the spore regrowing sequence in episode 14 was like a third of the budget for the season because it was one of the best shots of the show.
Well, that's the thing. They did that on Enterprise. Really amazing stuff for the time, all the time. Foundation imaging was on par sometimes with movie effects for a TV budget. And they delivered six times the amount of shots in one episode. They did 22 episodes. I don't get that. You know, it was going somewhere wrong. you know, and I hope season two, again, standing sets, that takes out millions.
Maybe the sets are just so big, because, I mean,
But that was a bad choice of spending, because you didn't really, like the throne room, it's great, moving on. You know, you appreciate it for all 5 minutes, then you move on. Was if you'd seen seven beauty passes of the Sharon and a fleet of Terran ships, you'd be like, oh, yeah. You know?
To be fair, the throne room from the Mirror Universe was used as the Orion strip club. So they got their use out of that set.
Well, I mean, they only used the tardigrade room where they sent it off in the space twice. When they sent it off the tardigrade and whenever Michael had to talk with them. That's a beautiful set. And they only used it twice, to my knowledge, unless they redressed it so drastically
couldn't tell. And Lorca's room didn't appear after episode 4.
That's true.
Or 5.
And I mean, there was, again, tons of detail in that set.
Badly spent budget. And again, that could just be all the rewrites. They built a lot of stuff, couldn't use it. We don't know. But, I mean, what do you guys think? Does it feel like less money on screen than other Trek shows, despite the budgets?
Well, I mean, as Stuart said before, the one thing that it gets me is that we don't get those passing ships. I mean, we see the ships flying, but, like, I think you're right. The last episode, we got some beautiful shots of Discovery and obviously that great shot of the Enterprise and Discovery. But for the money and for the time that they took to develop that, the only thing I could say in argument or devil's advocate is that maybe it's just this is the launch of it and it costs a lot to make get everything set up to do this, you know.
But again, Enterprise season 1, same thing, double the episodes, less budget, looks sure. Very excellent.
Sure. But I mean, how many, I guess it's the same thing. I mean, it's like you can pull people from all professions from all over, you know, the spectrum to sign on to Star Trek, and they can bring their talents to bear.
I mean, they're even filmed
in Toronto because of the tax breaks.
Sure.
They couldn't film in LA, it was too expensive. So even Saving, other shows were filmed in LA and such. So, yeah.
To me, the show did look good, but I do wonder where the budget went. And there was a couple times where there's a couple minutes, like, there's your budget, but there was only one or two times where I was really thinking that. And I do think the sets are so massive, they're a huge part of it. Because I want to say, like, I remember reading or seeing a video, just that, like, center section on the Enterprise D bridge or that goes around where Worf stands next to, that was $75,000 at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that's a huge amount of the budget just for that one piece. So, I mean, I can see with the Shenzhou Bridge and the Discovery Bridge being so massive that a lot of the budget got sank into that, got sank into Jason Isaacs. We're probably not going to see Jason Isaacs again because of that. Michelle Yeoh, I mean, she's a big-name actress as well. So
I just want to just put one more thing on that. Just, sure. You know, look at Game of Thrones. You can see the budget in that show. You can see it is one of the expensive shows. You see it on screen. You know, last season, especially some of those CG sequences with the dragons were just mind-bogglingly good. And you saw every single dollar on screen. You could tell that was, you know, I mean, Star Trek is only like 2 million less an episode. And that's what you're getting?
But I mean, let's go back. I mean, it's been a while since I've seen season one of Game of Thrones, but was it that amazing? I mean, it was pretty cool.
Season one was not that amazing. It's definitely ramped up.
Discovery gets as much as Game of Thrones season 8, but 2 million less. It's getting like twice or three times the budget of season 1 of Game of Thrones. So, it is comparable now because they are getting – it's on that same scale. It's not starting at season 1 level. It's starting at season 7 level.
Do we know at all, are they planning to release the numbers of how much money they made off All Access during Star Trek Discovery? Because, I mean, it's kind of been veiled. Like, there's speculation, but I haven't seen anything.
Personally, I don't think they're going to. The only reason they made All Access is because they saw us throwing money at fan films, so they knew we'd throw money at Discovery. And then secondly, they're using... I used to work at a cable company, so I know that cable companies, at least here in America, whenever like they do like leases for like, you know, Channel 2, CBS, Channel Fox, you know, NBC, they do leases and they come every year. And basically, when the lease goes up, they start streaming on their channels those little ticker boxes that say, oh, look, you know, Time Warner is getting ready to shut down, or whatever cable company is getting ready to shut down this channel because they won't pay us more money. So now that CBS All Access has a dollar amount that people are paying for their content, they can bring this to cable companies and say, like, hey, look, we need at least this much because other people are paying this much. So it's a twofold attack. It's an attack on the cable company, and then it's an attack on, oh, look, Star Trek fans are throwing all this money at fan films. I mean, that's my take on it. I mean,
I think CBS is kind of ahead of the curve, because I think this is where it's all going. Somehow, some way, that you'll basically pay for the shows you want to see, and all the other stuff is rubbish, and you just, you know, throw it away, kind of thing.
But CBS is going to force the cable company's hand, and other networks are going to follow suit.
Oh, absolutely. But that's where I think it's all going to be. I mean, sooner or later. But on top of that, that people have to pay for this, and that it's all set up. I think shareholders will have to know how much they made. So I'm thinking, like, at like year end, we should find out how much money they made by the end of this fiscal year. Mm. You know, from CBS. I'm just curious how much money fans poured into CBS's coffers for the show.
And that was all profit, because Netflix paid for the season outright.
Yep.
So they made 100% profit on that show.
I know. It's very sad.
Yeah. I don't know what deal they have in Canada here, because it is filmed in Toronto. And the Space Channel, which is out of Toronto, airs it on network television as part of their deal. And we're the only country in the world that has it on network television with commercials and everything, which kind of sucks, because A, we get commercials, and B, we don't get a next week on. So I have to watch that the next day. So I don't know what kind of deal was made there, as far as it has to tie in with them filming in Toronto, I'm sure. Some kind of deal with Canadian network. I'd be interested to find out exactly how much CBS did make.
And I want to jump on about it being, you know, forward thinking. I certainly agree. I mean, I thought when I heard it was all access, not that it was all access, but it was online exclusive. That's a really cool thing. You know, so in platform, you know, if they said, right, we're going to spend 50% of the profit back into the budget for next year, awesome, we all win. You know, then Trek fans, if it was a really good show, they'd adhere to canon. I mean, that's the thing. If they were actually, say, a anthology, I mean, we've pitched anthology numerous times. If it was a TNG era show, but you obviously updated the graphics to be all touchscreen, like just that one step ahead we can do now, but still TNG aesthetic, you know, but mid. So it's very much what we know, 7 years of TNG fans plus all the movies, you know, fans want this. And then CBS All Access, you have to pay to watch it. Okay, great. Guess what? Fans are going to pay for it hand over fist. And boom, they recoup their budget. Boom, they get profit. Next year, you put that back into the show, you make another season anthology or something else, or another season. And then fans are directly paying for it. And okay, maybe not new people, but if you want Trek fans paying for a show that you're making money on, they would make profit out of that. And then you can use those profits to make another show, or, you know, as I've said before, make an amazing TV show first,
right,
with great stories. And people will just randomly find it. Oh, what's this new Star Trek? I don't know. I'll check it out. That's amazing. You know, Black Mirror, you can just make good stories and they will come. You know, they didn't make a good story, and they weren't good at canon. So they didn't win on multiple fronts. And that's why we're complaining, really. I mean, again, if TNG season one also failed at stories, a lot of them, and Enterprise season one, very vanilla stories, you know, we're not giving them extra credit. You know, make a good season of television. Things like Arrow, Flash, Legends, you know, they're all a bit of a step up. You know, a lot of these shows have an amazing first season, so you can do it. You know, the fact they've made an okay season to mediocre season says, damn, that was the writing. Damn, that was whatever. You know, in these modern day, when you have years of prep, years of budget build up, you know, almost no excuse to make a bad season of television.
I think the excuse is that they lost Ryan Fuller early on in the setup for Discovery. So he wrote the first three episodes and pitched to them where the rest of the series was going to go. And that's, and then everyone else took over and they kind of just ran with it and did whatever they wanted with it. And I read an article recently. I messaged Stuart that I didn't send him the link, but I was like, did you see this article? Because there's so many coming out now that Discovery's over. And they basically said after Ryan Fuller left, we figured out how we wanted the show to end with the Enterprise showing up, and then we worked backwards. So, like, it's painfully obvious that they had no idea what they were going to do. And they did know about the Mirror Universe because Ryan Fuller pitched that to them. And he pitched it earlier, and that would have made so much more sense, because leaving two episodes to wrap up the war after you've, like, raised the stakes so high second to last episode, it just – and then you just, like, oh, we have a bomb, and Laurel's going to hold Kronos hostage.
For an amazing book, serialized show, to have three episodes of filler after episode three is ridiculous. You're right. Mirror Universe, bring in early, give us six episodes of arc. Again, they messed up in the scripting. It really is, you know, good writing could have saved it. And again, season two, that's the exciting thing. You know, season two, they can like a really amazingly solid season two. I'm really excited.
As long as they don't change showrunners, or as long as they don't change, I mean, they can add people to the writer's room, by all means, get Ronald D. Moore in there. You know, add good Trek alum to your, just don't kick anybody out. Because if you kick somebody out who's, who like were the, who's the main idea guy, like Brian Fuller, then it's going to be another falling apart season. So season two is exciting as long as they keep stacked together.
Yeah, and dare I say, going back to what Samuel said earlier, season one of Enterprise looks so damn good. Why? Because we pulled in alumni like Michael Westmore for the makeup, like Michael and Denise Okuda for the consulting and the on-set visuals, like Doug Drexler, people that have a deep-rooted interest and love for Star Trek, which seem to be pushed to the wayside in this one as far as bringing on a new production team goes. Well, one or two of them snuck in, but I mean, you got to bring back these people that know and love the universe.
Whatever could be said about Enterprise season one, vanilla and not great, it was Star Trek.
Yeah,
and absolutely. They really tried. You know, if once you listen to Doug's, how he backtracked the Enterprise to the Enterprise, you know, 1701 to NX. I mean, they really tried. All the details in the sets are thought through. If you look at Discovery Bridge.
Yeah.
I don't think anything that you thought through beyond the aesthetic. Yeah, believe me, the NX was really thought through. And it might not, some people say it looks more advanced. I disagree. I think it looks more, you know, modern, upgraded, because it looks, you know, perspectives and all that. But you can absolutely argue that either way. But you could argue their perspective as well. Discovery, you really can't. It is visually their own thing.
Yeah.
I mean, and if you just size the bridge.
Yeah, seems like space is not at a premium in these early days.
Yeah, I know people have said to move the cameras around, but cameras are not that big anymore, relatively speaking. Even 60s, you know, those sets, we've been on those sets, Stuart. They're teeny. Those cameras, they're huge.
They were huge in the 60s, yeah.
And they made it realistic feeling, looking, and small but intimate, big enough, you know, and functional, very, very functional. Because Matt Jeffries is a designing master, you know.
With realism in mind, absolutely.
Discovery needs to take a step back and honestly readdress its Trekness, and that's a really simple thing.
Yeah, I don't know how they're not going to reverse anything now. I mean, Discovery is not going to get redesigned by any stretch of the imagination.
Well, refit. No, I mean, refit. It is that easy. Look at Star Trek's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. New bridges on every turn, pretty much. You know,
right. Easily explained in canon, too.
Exactly. The refit towards TOS. I mean, you know, I'm fine with the TOS bridge looking different. It should be the same structure, but all the buttons, all the dials, all the diagrams should all be different. But as long as the physical walls are the same, everything else can feel different, because at least it looks design consistency, just in a modern twist. You know, you just, you know, update Discovery a tad and just scale her down, please.
Yeah,
that's very hard to do.
Yeah, your guys' episode on the scales of Discovery was jaw dropping.
We just report like, it like it is.
I was like, that is too big. That is ridiculous. But
well, it's not tall. It's just really long.
Yeah, but it's ridiculously long.
Yeah, and like people have said, if you compare it to the people in the window of the bridge window, it's actually not that long. It's actually shorter than the Constitution class, which makes perfect sense. But they've gone out on record now and said that it's this length. It just doesn't tie in visually or technically. It just doesn't work.
Do you think it's like a mis nomenclature or something like that? That's whoever figured that out completely scaled it wrong, or...
I know it was a producer thing saying, right, I mean, they built the Discovery, and then they said to John, right, this is the scale, and he had to redraw the windows. It was just a, you know, from up top, and they probably had a JJ influence, that, you know, that side of it, that were like, well, they make big ships, we're going to, you know, that's modern Trek, we'll keep them consistent with that, and that's what people are responding to.
And that was the downside for JJ, because Ryan Church had designed the Enterprise, the windows are the right scale to be like the same size as the original Constitution class. And then JJ's like, I want 30 shuttles in the shuttle bay. Well, that won't work. I'll make it work. So they scaled the ship up, and they didn't change anything like the window detailing, things like that, that show us scale.
Yeah.
And those problems were in Star Trek III, the Bird of Prey. I mean, left, right, and center. Yeah. Obviously, we're not justifying the past, but with modern technology and modern budgets, how they're making active mistakes that shouldn't be made, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
1987 is different than 2018 with everything we have.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
And every series, even TOS, had a writer's Bible that had certain rules laid out in it. I'm wondering if Discovery has that, because it seems like their canon guy is asleep at the end of the board table, you know, passed out in his, like, pastrami sandwich or something.
We need Ronald D. Moore attention in the writer's room, at least as a consultant.
I agree. I mean, Stuart, that's, yeah, like, where, I mean, obviously there is some kind of canon person there, but they're really not listening to him that much or her that much. It's kind of silly.
Yeah, and I mentioned that in a post, and somebody commented on it and said the only reason the canon person is there is to make sure they don't retell the same story over again that they've done in another series or another episode.
Magic's to make the sanest man go mad? What?
Yeah. So whatever, then you don't understand what canon is. Those guys are spelling canon with two N's. I'm sure there's a guy at the conference table with a little tiny canon going, "I'm the canon guy."
Yeah. Well, the thing is, they're doing their job. You know, they get the job, they come in, and they say to them, "Right, it's a reboot, guys, visual reboot. So this is your job." And they're like, "Okay, boss, that's my paycheck." And so they're just doing their job. It's the higher ups. It's those choices that have been made that people have to follow. You know, originally the Brian Fuller said to the dart team, "No round nacelles." That's no one's decision that makes sense, but it's an executive decision. And guess what? They're the boss. So end of discussion. And that was a problem.
But why would Brian Fuller?
For the wrong people in charge, wrong things happen.
But you know? Brian Fuller was a Trekkie. He wrote so much Voyager. He wrote some really good Deep Space Nine episodes. I just he was supposed to be one of us, and he's like he called the
yes. But isn't what's the director's name? Tarantino. He might be a Trekkie, but if he wants to put six sex scenes in a new Star Trek movie, and they've got blood everywhere, you know what I mean? Just because you're a Trek fan doesn't mean you can make good Trek, you know? Yeah. And
if it's a Klingon story and there's blood everywhere, I would be fine with it.
Ah, yes, absolutely. Context.
Klingon love
context
story.
Is key. I can even say
context is king.
Well, yes,
even better.
Yeah, like if Quentin Tarantino's doing like a Klingon thing, that would be amazing, because they've been hinting at Klingons in the JJ verse, a conflict with them since the first movie. So,
yeah,
why haven't they gone there yet? So I mean, if
movie four would have been so great, Klingon War done JJ would have been excellent
with Quentin Tarantino at the helm.
Well, no, have him his own separate universe. I mean, seriously, reboots and alternate universes are fine. Look at Parallels. There was a trillion Enterprises. You know, yeah. That is
I mean, it's a trillion realities.
Yeah, seriously. Give him an alternate universe. Say, right, you are in 2280, and this is what the Enterprise looks like-ish.
You're on Earth 33. Yeah, go.
Yeah, and that's absolutely fine, you know? Yeah. But when you start giving canon, well, we have every right to hold you to account because you're putting your own rules in place and then you're breaking them. You know what I mean? Easiest thing from the start, although we don't have a lot less videos to do, so thanks for not doing that. You know, third universe. Okay, great. There's no problems with canon. Stuart, what do we talk about? I don't know.
Design. I love it.
Yeah. And we were speculating this might be a third universe at one point, but
they tied everything nicely up in a bow at the end of last episode.
Yeah, okay. Let's go to this point, because we were touching on this a second ago about the war and the war that happened. Stuart, the last time you were on the show, I asked you directly, do you think the wars happened too soon? Like, shouldn't it have happened like maybe 10 years before this? And I think that's how you felt at the end at that time. When we were talking last time we were on our show, does the war make sense when it's taking place? Does the war make sense to you how it ends? To me, it's infuriating. It just doesn't make a lot of sense to me where they placed it and how they ended it.
I agree with your points. It doesn't make sense at all. And not only that, the fact that, okay, a third of their fleet's been destroyed, fine, you got to rebuild it, you can build new TOS-style ships, fine, whatever. 20% of your Federation's been taken over, you got to reclaim some of that in this peace treaty, because where the borderline was in one of the first border maps we saw was pretty much accurate to TOS era, so you got to reclaim all that territory. I mean, it just doesn't fit in the timeline, and for them not to be talking about it in TOS. I mean, I watched Aaron DeMercy the other day. War with the Klingons has finally started, you know, in that episode. Yeah. It lasts like a day because the Organians step in and stop it. It just doesn't make sense. It just doesn't make sense where it is. And like we said earlier, if you had gone post Voyager, you could have a new war with a certain branch of Klingons. That'd be right. fine.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and just the psychological like devastation of just having that kind of war take place in Federation space. I mean, everyone would be traumatized, and the people that we would see in TOS would just be like these, people who have survived this war, and they're mm-hmm. probably not all there in their head because they're. Have psychological problems from what they experienced.
Well, we were losing every step of the way except one when we were holding our own. I mean, there were massacres, and for 9 months, the Klingons ran free.
Yeah.
I mean, this wasn't a war. This was a slaughter that if they were more unified, they would have wiped us out.
Yeah.
I mean, this wasn't, you know what I mean? I mean, we would be so radically altered by this sort of strategy. You know, imagine if, okay, name, okay, imagine if the Nazis got to America and killed like the entire East Coast.
Yeah,
they had subs on the East Coast. I've read weird stories about,
and they did. Yeah,
it's like if they destroyed 35% of the East Coast, like the entire swath. I don't think Americans would be as kind of Germans now. Not just something grown into people by natural whatever, but absolutely. Something that drastic would have changed the perspective of everyone born after it.
Yeah,
you know.
Absolutely, and I think European countries and, you know, Asia, and there where there was severe war going on, you know, I think that was embedded in people's psyche. And, like, you know, America and Canada, we've never gone through something that traumatic, so we never have had that. So we're kind of callous to that kind of when we, you know, a lot of Americans, especially a lot of Americans, are callous to people going through these situations. Mm-hmm. And you're like, man, you're just... you know, you just got to like have some empathy for these people. But that's my point is like it, if you've gone through war or something that terrible, you're not going to just snap back.
10 years later, we're going exploring, guys.
Yeah.
You're going to be more militaristic, you know?
Yeah, it's like, no, I think I'm just going to go home and relax because I don't want to do that anymore.
Well, no. Because those who would do that got killed in the 30% of the fleet. Only the people left are the ones that would keep going.
Yeah,
maybe.
Retconning it, guys.
but speaking of canon, so does For Whom Gods Destroy not matter anymore? Because Discovery says we haven't seen the Klingons in 100 years, but during Discovery, Kirk's on the Farragut. But in the For Whom Gods Destroy, Kirk says he studied the battles that Garth of Izar did during the Klingon War when he was at the Academy.
The 4-year war that ties back into Fassa. Because Fassa used that storyline for the 4-year war.
Well, that's just symptomatic of we're retconning TOS.
So, yeah. What happened to Aaron of Mercy? I mean, Aaron of Mercy, For Whom Gods Destroy. It's just like, what happened to all that war? Where's that war? How do we not see the Klingons for 100 years? It's like Brian Fuller didn't know what was happening when he wrote the first two episodes.
And it certainly devalues the Klingons. We didn't see him for 100 years. That was a radical thing to say.
It was a dumb thing to say.
There were a few nice nods mentioning Archer and not being there for 100 years. That was nice, but it doesn't really solve any of the problems you just created for yourself.
I mean, it's one of the
that was another breadcrumb for the fans. Like, here you go. We remembered something.
Well, we said that on that episode too. We're just like, it's like for all the times they're breaking canon so much, they're like, oh look, here's a tidbit.
Yeah. Here's the Enterprise. Okay, thank you. I'll shut up now. And I'm Stu. I'm so glad you brought up Fassa. I grew up with the Fassa games as well, and I adored all that, and I poured over all those materials, and I can't, you know, maybe you could say. You know, like the Star Wars expanded universe. Maybe that's all. Like, you know, Disney bought the franchise and wiped all that away, or nitpicked what they wanted. But there's still things that absolutely make sense. Like Dave was saying, you know, Whom Gods Destroy, Garth of Isengard. You know, these things should have at least we put some tent poles somewhere and say this is we have to hit this mark some point in the story.
Fixed points in time, as Doctor Who would say.
Yeah, exactly. So. Yeah. Frustrating, very frustrating. And I think we're all in the same boat from what I've, you know, watched from you guys is that the end of the war is just like, okay, so we're just going to end it just like that. Like Lorella says, I have a bomb in the center of the planet and I'm going to blow everything up.
Well, the biggest problem with this war, bar the canon, which is obviously a big issue, is that it started for stupid reasons on stupid grounds without enough justification, no setup, and poor writing. And so how do you obviously going to end a stupid war that makes little sense, a stupid way that makes little sense? You know what I mean? I'm not surprised because of how poor it was. I do not see the justification for this war.
Well, the whole war, I mean, I feel like the writers misled us, and I've been in a big conversation on Facebook today with my brother on our Facebook group. You can see it if you're on there. But he said the season was about the Klingon War. My stance is the season is not about the Klingon War. A season having a war in the backdrop does not mean it's about the war.
Like, which you see no major battles except two. You get no sense of the fleet, you get no sense of the Klingon fleet, you get no sense of those dying, you get no sense of the civilians, you get no sense of the planets. It's such a microcosm of this one ship, does their own episodic stories. The war is the most poor backdrop.
Yeah, no, it's like Casablanca. There's a war going on, but yeah. It's more of it's a love story. So
again, poor writing. They forgot. They focus so much on the small, they forgot about the story. Characters are great if they're good characters, which they were not. But you need the story too. You need the world too. They said, we're going to make it really character focused. Only works if they've got good characters. And didn't even do that.
Exactly. But I mean, if the writers would have said, the show has a backdrop of the Klingon War, that would have been accurate. But the writers said, this show is about the Klingon War, which it wasn't. It was about Mirror Universe and Lorca. 90% of the show is about that.
Yeah, it's the story of Lorca and then the conclusion of the war.
Yeah.
That's it. I mean, you almost wish that it started with Lorca, who... Imagine if he had started the war, you know?
That would have been fantastic.
Yeah, he started the war to make, like, Emperor Palpatine. Again, we can fix Discovery so easily. You know, Palpatine got control of everything because he forced the situation when he was given power. If Lorca started the war justifiably and made him be the hero, like Garth of Izar, we could say, by Kirk's reverence, you know, they give him the power, the Discovery, which he then uses to go back home. Boom. It's about the Klingon War, but through the eyes of Lorca. Stronger instantly, you know?
Absolutely.
And George O could be an admiral that we see.
Absolutely.
Admiral Cornwall is actually the emperor. We have that connection. Boom, boom, fixed. Again, so easy to rewrite Discovery to make it good and not actually change anything. Just swap.
Just tweaking it. Yeah. Making little changes.
Fantastic points.
It's frustrated me at the end of the war. It's like, yeah, like Klingons will just retreat. Yeah, okay. That makes sense.
Well, just one thing I forgot to mention earlier when we were talking about Klingons is around when they premiered the first episode, I think it was either at Buffalo, it was not at Buffalo, at the big Comic Con in Los Angeles or at STLV, that they got Michael, not the two new guys who are doing the makeup. And they said there was a biological reason for the reason Klingons being bald. And they said, oh, they've got all these receptors on their head. And so it was never, Klingon biology, other than having two dicks, was never mentioned on screen. So none of this is canon for why the Klingons have no hair. Like, they said there were going to be reasons, and we never hear about Klingon biology other than they have two dicks.
Well, Discovery has shown us that, just like J.J. Abrams with Khan, he's not Khan, guys.
Yeah. Oh, it's Khan.
Yeah. And Marina Sirtis, I quote this to my parents recently, you know, Marina Sirtis said in an interview last year that Ocean New Generations wasn't very good, but she was under contract to say it was good. So that's what she did.
Right.
So guess what? They have to say whatever they have to say for the show.
Right.
It's only in 20 years we'll hear, yeah, all of our ideas were thrown out. Oops, but we had them.
Well, like Mark Hamill in Last Jedi, he came out saying all this shit, and then all of a sudden he shut up because Disney must have said, shut the hell up.
But boy, the respect for him, you know, 10 times fold. Like, yeah. You know, honest story. It's like, yes, thank you, Mark.
Why'd you do that to my character?
Yeah.
No one will ever know.
Hashtag I'm with Mark before he recanted.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, a forced recant is never really a recant.
Yeah, but then he went on and said, I say whatever I want to say. I'm like, sure you do, Mark.
So I'm glad you feel this is problematic. So I think anybody listening to this this podcast at this point, we're like, boy, these guys really don't like Discovery. So
we love Discovery.
Let's talk about some gleaming moments or things that we did like about it, instead of making people like with the taste of ash in their mouth because of our
nitpickiness.
Do you mean Ash Tyler or do you mean Volk? Taste of who? Sorry,
I don't want the taste of ash in my mouth. No,
nobody ate him.
Oh, I think Michael might have a little... No.
Oh. We're going there now.
Bring him the happy. So, bring him the happy.
So this is the interesting thing is I felt that Michael Berman's character was interesting, and her story arc is interesting, but I feel like Janeway in the first beginning of Voyager, she's written too stiffly. Like you don't really enjoy her character, and everybody, she's so like, she's so rigid that everyone else kind of flows around her. So you have like Tilly and even Lorca and all these other people seem so much more vibrant than her. And I get it that she's sort of like waking up out of her Vulcan indoctrination. And that is interesting in its own right, but I feel like it's so slow. And like we said before, the Tyler, Ash Tyler, Vok thing was so telegraphed. We saw it coming a mile away. And, that, I mean, I enjoy her acting, but her character seems kind of bland. And, I mean, do you guys have anything else about her? Cause she was supposed to be the main character.
Yeah. Like, well, what have I said since the beginning of this, Samuel, about Michael Burnham?
You don't like her.
I can't stand her. That's right. Until the last episode where she kind of stands up for the Federation ideals, and it's like, okay, you know, there's one or two moments in the series where she kind of starts to grow a little bit, and you get to see a little bit of more of a character. And at the end of the season, I don't know if I hate her as much as I did when I started. Hate's a strong word. I'm sorry, I shouldn't really say hate. I like Lorca much better than I liked Burnham.
Oh, even
finding out that he was from the Marine Universe.
Yeah, speaking of things we like, Lorca, so good.
Dave's a huge
Lorca. Yeah, absolutely. I love the fact that Burnham got her commission back. I think that's well-earned, considering everything she's been through. She has been through a rough time, especially with the whole Ash Tyler thing, and kind of dropping her defenses and kind of letting someone in and having that really backfire on her, not really backfire, but more explode, in her face. Yeah, really. Yeah, yeah. The way she dealt with that was pretty, pretty interesting to watch. And I have a much greater respect for her character now at the end of the season, but yes, you're right. I think she was very poorly written initially. And, yeah, I mean, Samuel knows more about characters and writing than I do. Just what do you think about Michael Burnham?
Not the right character for the right season, and Discovery highlights that an ensemble kind of stronger. Mm-hmm. And only in the last three episodes are they showing us these side characters that we don't know the names of, have no personalization, yet they're, you know, they all stand up, but it's like, we don't know any of you.
You know, I mean, sit back down.
Kim is a non-character, but you still love him. You know, because he actually puts a lot of him. Garrett Wang puts so much of himself in what little he was given. Michael Burnham's a weird one. The possibilities of that character were huge, especially with, I thought, actually quite tastefully handled the, you know, well, I sent Spock instead of you. Ooh, you know, really interesting little, that added something, I felt. But, you know, you said Vulcan indoctrination. That's kind of harsh. I mean, Vulcans are a good way of life as well.
Well, I just meant it's like, it's not, she didn't come from a human side, so she probably didn't feel, she had a different aspect of life, so she saw a different way of looking at things, and all of a sudden her cold, emotionless, just pure logic start melting away.
But was she even that logical, though? She was a poor Vulcan and a poor human. Well, you know, she was a poor blend of each.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a poor airplane.
I think she made some
really
logical choices.
You know, I can pretend. I mean, I guess my point is just that she was trying to be something she wasn't, and but she was brought up in that, and then suddenly realized this is not who I am, and she started breaking out and taking chances. And the cool thing about her is we do see growth, but it's like glacial. You know, the growth is like, okay, you know.
Great word.
It is. It's just like, come on, just let's move on. This is a TV show. It's like, let's speed it up.
I think you're right, though. You know, everything is by contrast. Mm. You know, everyone else looks more interesting because she's so not interesting. Yeah. That's why, you know, that's why Tilly is there.
Yeah.
To be the only one. You know, which she's written for us to love her. You know, it's like I said when Rogue One came out. I said the only reason the robot is there is because they need a funny something.
Yeah.
And he is given all the funny lines because he's the funny one. Nothing organic about it. You know, there's some shows where characters evolve and you work out, you know, like Worf. In season one, they didn't realize he'd be the prune juice joke guy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But he grew. Yeah. They developed it. And Burnham's the whole cast is tricky. And they go through weird growth. Like Stamets was not good, then great, then medium. Saru was okay, then fun, then boring, then better, but not great. You know, everything is a weird focus, and I do think Burnham was not written appropriately for the season. But they have the chance to do a sort of a soft reset in season two, especially considering, you know, the amount of time she's lived. She's gone from 7 years. Promising career with apparently one of the best Starfleet captains in history. Okay, sure.
Mm-hmm. Right,
to
right.
Losing everything and having so much reflective time, which is, I mean, what can that do to somebody, you know, who didn't necessarily do anything wrong, and then getting her chance to prove herself again, and then getting commissioned again and saving the Federation. I mean, that's a lot of where you can take a character and allow you to have a soft reset. She's where she was at the start of the season, but more open.
I think you're right, and I think like Stuart said, at the very end we saw her finally stand up for what, you know, Federation Starfleet ideals are, and that's what is great about that ending, is she said, you know, hell no, we're not going to commit genocide. And I think if anybody has ever had a truly humbling experience, you do realize what it is to be humble and not full of yourself. And maybe this will make her into a better character, more reflective, and not maybe less Kirk and maybe more Picardish in a way. But she's poised to be interesting, but this season, she just felt like a cardboard cutout. And even though she's a fantastic actress, it was not, didn't make me want to know more about her.
And that's an easy summary of the
show.
That being
said, some of the dialogue. Yeah, and that being said, some of the dialogue and scenes that were written for her, especially where she confronts Tyler at the end, were fantastically written dialogue and well acted. But where it fit in that episode just slowed the pace of that episode right down. It didn't work. As Samuel and myself said, it should have been closer to the beginning of that episode, not right when the action was going to hit. So again, kind of poor planning. Poor writing. I mean, poor writing is a bad thing to say because I just said it was great dialogue and a well-written scene. But you get where I'm going with that.
Yeah.
There were some fantastic standout scenes in this season. Very well written and very well paced. But they were kind of hit and miss.
Yeah, it's a first season of Star Trek. It's easy to be kind of hard on it because first seasons are rough. Next Gen's first two seasons are rough. DS9's first couple seasons are rough. people might think we're being hard on it, but there's so much to look forward to. We've got an established cast, and hopefully we'll get more of the ensemble. Hopefully we'll learn, you know, more about Aaron, more about Demure, more about the other lady who sits up at the con of Discovery.
Wait, you mean like give her dialogue this season? This next season?
Maybe.
That'd be nice.
Yeah, there's all these people. We don't have any sense of who they are. In the TNG movies, they made Sulu and Chekhov like main characters, even though they would miss episodes at a time during the run of TOS. But even then, we still knew them.
Even what was it, Lieutenant Hawk in First Contact, was it?
Yeah.
You got to know him more in the space of 30 minutes in that movie than you did in most of these characters in the whole season.
As I've said before, Discovery's biggest problem is poor writing, and that's because they rewrote so much in a rush. And they had to, you know, it's just poor writing. If they'd had the time, same with Star Trek Renegades, a fan film, rerushed a lot of the time, the writing is not as good, but you can see the potential. Right. If it was written amazingly, writing is a huge deal because you give a good actor a bad script, there's a finite you can do. You give an amazing script to a bad actor, there's a finite amount you can do. You give an amazing script to an amazing actor, you have got gold.
Yes.
And when you knew who you were casting and you knew where you were going, I just wish they had that cohesion, because you, like I said, there's less excuse to make such a poor first season today, you know.
But is there anything else that we can like say that was positive about Discovery? You know, I mean,
we'll do quickfire. We've been so negative. Quickfire. I mean, David, quickfire, like five best things.
Lorca was amazing. Rainn Wilson as Harry Wood was amazing, even though his episode was a one-off. It was brilliantly done. It was a lot of fun. It just, unfortunately, the episode, kind of dead-ended. Michelle Yeoh, killing her off at the beginning, then bringing her back as the Empress was so much fun. Although I think Harry Mudd as Emperor would have been really fun, too. the chaos of the Empire only excavated by having Harry Mudd as a leader. But Giorgio made sense for the overall story point, and that was a lot of fun. I liked getting to see Kronos. I liked getting to see Orions there on the planet. They had some really fun scenes. Like, the Gorgamander joke was very well timed. And then probably my most favorite scene of the entire show is when Tilly walks in, and she's like, oh, Giorgio, da-da-da-da-da. And then they're like, no, that's not her. Oh, wait. And then that was the best scene of Discovery. I absolutely love that scene. Aaron.
Oh, five best. First of all, just I do enjoy the visuals. I mean, I don't necessarily love everything about the ship designs and like the Klingon ships don't really make a lot of sense to me sometimes. But beautiful to watch. I do like the acting, even, Sequoia Martin Green. I think she's wonderful. I just think she's poorly written or not as interesting. I enjoy the concept of the spore drive. I just wish it fit better into canon. I don't know how I feel about it, but I mean, I think it's a great sci-fi idea.
It's basically the FTL drive from Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, it's an interesting thought. I don't know where it's going to go from there. It's one of those just wild ideas. So it's cool for that. I gotta say, I think it's great that we had a openly gay couple on Star Trek. I think it's about time. I know we've had a lesbian kiss or somewhat relationship, but this was the first time we've seen
pseudo lesbian kiss.
Pseudo lesbian kiss.
Because one of them used to be a guy, kind of.
right. And I think they did it really well. I think they wrote those two characters really well, that you can watch them even as a straight guy. I'm not going to be like, oh, this is weird. I enjoyed watching them, and I wasn't like at any point thinking, I wasn't turned off or feeling that this was like mechanical or tropey or anything like that. I don't know. Lastly, I guess I'm just excited to see where they're going to go from this with seeing Enterprise. I'm a huge original series fan. I grew up on it before even Next Gen, and just really happy to see where they might take that. It's going to be fun.
Mm-hmm. Well,
Stuart,
mine's probably not going to be as in depth as all that. I mean, I liked Lorca's character quite a bit, even from the get go, more of that kind of, as a captain of a military ship kind of vibe, as opposed to the more softer their fed captains we've seen. I really like Tilly. Tilly was, as I said in one of our reviews, kind of the epitome of the entire Federation, just all in one person, just a loving person that's just understanding and smart and just fantastic overall character. I have to agree with you that the relationship between Stamets and Hugh was fantastically written and very well done. I really enjoyed Stamets' character as well, even from the beginning. I seem to enjoy the not-so-popular characters. I don't know why that is. Lorca and Stamets, even when he was kind of an asshole, I thought they were great. And they did mellow a little bit, and I did enjoy that as well. So seeing Paris like that, kind of a visual representation of the Federation we've never really seen before. We've seen San Francisco. Yeah, it's great. But this was really the future. You know what I mean? You could really see the development of the culture. I mean, that was fantastic. The spore drive was a very cool idea. Pulling in the whole mycelium network, I think, was a fantastic idea based on a real scientific theory. And Stamets' character is actually named after the actual guy that came up with it. I think that's also kind of cool. I don't know if I've hit five or not, but it's... And Mud was great. That episode was really fun. I really enjoyed that. All the deaths of Lorca, even though I love the guy, they were really well done.
Yeah, it was hilarious.
It was a good montage.
Always
which a lot of people are which a lot of people, when they go back and watch it now, are really going to enjoy, knowing that he's from the Mirror Universe. You know what I mean?
But at the same time, I can't see Mira Lorca losing to Mudd. Like Prime, exactly. like Prime Universe, yeah. Lorca, I can see him, you know, giving in to Mudd, but like Mirror Universe Lorca should have had that more of an edge. I don't know.
Well, he did the first 63 times they did the scenario. I mean, he learned. It's fine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there was a lot to come out of the season. They're kind of all over the place, and I have to rewatch it to really, you know, get a feel for what I really enjoyed.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
How about you, Samuel?
Yeah, I was trying to think as we were talking. It's kind of like all the small things, because the broad strokes we know are kind of all over the place. I think the Shinjo exterior is really interesting, and John did a great design just as a pure aesthetic, so that's one. I think I love the concept of the Tyler Vok storyline and him being the first and where that could go, which we discussed in a previous episode of Trek Yards. You know, the potential for that is ridiculous in a good way. I don't think they're going to go that way, but the potential's there. So I like the idea of that, although, again, easy to fix the way that was set up. The Mudd episode, Time Loop, was a very, 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 very well done Time Loop episode, and one of the better. That was actually a Star Trek episode, you know?
Yeah.
Through and through, which was great. And Mudd, yeah, he really had fun, and you could see it. Gosh. I was trying to think while you're talking, but it's. Oh, Mirror Universe. Yeah, the Mirror Universe, the art design Mirror Universe was great, bar the Charon, that was great, and I thought they actually added to the Mirror Universe, which most of Discovery hasn't added to Trek. It's just been alternate, whereas Mirror Universe I thought was a distinct, yes, this is great, and specifically the Burnham line about, you know, they're always afraid. Uh-huh. You know, I never thought that before, but such a tangible, like, oh yeah, that deepens my Trek. Uh-huh. Honestly, the Enterprise, the final moment, seeing that at the very last minute, when this is the beat that will be the taste in our mouth to leave off for a year, all the missteps and you know, stepping in the wrong puddle, the non-canon puddle, to see a ship that is, you know, 75% right and shows all the respect that it deserves, just a bit updated, that was such a great sign, because that's the thing, that's the one shot they could do last, you know? The last order given could have been, yeah, we'll give them some cool stuff for season 2, let's make this more TOS, you know? And so that, I hope, is you know, I say there are problems that are symptomatic of the whole show. I think that is part of the, hopefully that's part of the vaccine of season 2. And so that got me excited. That because like I said, you know, season 2, so much excitement, so much potential. You know, they built this world, and they can even tie it in as a sub era. You know, there are ways, and we did a discussion of that, me and Stuart, and I got so excited by the possibilities. You know, how they can integrate the Klingons into the culture and add that third rung of Klingons, you know, the hair, the minimal ridges, the no ridges, the hair, the no hair. Like, there's so many things you could do. And if they were to, if the people were to say at the end of season 1, right, we've got to re-retcon everything back in, there are ways. And actually, some of them are really exciting. But that would admit a mistake. So I don't think they're going to do that. But potential is a good word, I think, from season 1. It just took 68 million to get a potentially good season 2. And that is one of my biggest problems. It shouldn't take that much to get a good season 2.
I thought of something. Oh, sorry, I thought of something else I liked while you were talking.
Yeah,
the multiple deaths of Commander Landry, because I absolutely hated her in both realities. She is just a bitch.
Oh man.
Well, how about this? How about wild speculation for season 2? Like, nothing's off the table. If you were to say, you know, Samuel or Stuart or Dave, you know, here's the keys to Discovery. What are you going to do with it? What would be the craziest thing?
Good question. We actually have a video coming out about that on Sunday. Okay. Where we speculate about season 2.
It's actually out. I just hadn't gotten to watch it yet.
It is Sunday, Stuart.
Oh, it is Sunday. Sorry, I'm living in the past. Today's Saturday for me. Sorry. they have a lot of potential, a lot of roads open to them right now. Whether they're going to use the Enterprise or not, I'm not sure. Like I said to Samuel in that one, I would kind of like it to be around for 4 or 5 episodes to kind of help them with a story plot. That'd be cool. But recasting Pike and Number One and Spock, it's kind of a sticky road, especially with all the controversy they've kind of created with the Enterprise. Mm-hmm. So are they going to kind of say there was a priority one distress call after all? Are they going to say, yeah, there's a problem back there. We're on our way to Earth or Vulcan, whatever. Can you guys take care of that? And then the Enterprise is going to warp out and, hey, there's your cameo, guys. The Enterprise exists. Here it is.
Well, let's hope it's more than just that.
And then move on with Discovery.
Yeah.
Hope so.
Yeah.
I would like to see Lorca, Prime Lorca.
Prime Lorca come back, yeah. That would be interesting to see Prime Lorca.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How about you, Samuel? Any wild speculation for season two?
Well, if I was given the keys, I would say, you know, you have this amazing cliffhanger, which I think is actually amazing as a cliffhanger. And you see this first scene and you see, you know, this the view screen, you see a Pike and you see a Spock, whatever. And then you hear him say, Discovery, we need you for a mission or something. And then it fades to black within the first 5 minutes and says, 6 months later. And now Discovery's had a refit. They've pulled the engines in because it's no longer a spore drive ship because that's too dangerous. They've refitted everything to look a little bit more TOS, but not a lot. Just, you know, pulled everything back 30%. Mm-hmm. And now there's this new mission. And only Discovery can do it. Only that crew. Something, something, something. And they have a, you know, starting off with Enterprise doing it unison. The Enterprise does something else. Cause it's a more important ship with a, you know, a more experienced crew, a stronger vessel with more, you know, that's part of the point. It does something really big. Discovery has to do its mission. Then it goes deep into Klingon space and they have to talk to, you know, Tyler and get his information. And we see the rejuvenation of the Klingon culture. We see how, you know, 100% we need to see, we're not going to, but we need to see, you know, how the smooth heads are the underclass, the haired Klingons are the average, but all we saw was the elites. You know, we saw a very specific class and we see all three of those race subsets of Klingons, you know, interact. And Tyler, I call him Tyler Vok because he's both characters, you know, he's trying to unify with Laurel. And we see all three sets of Klingons. We see the amazing diversity, like they promised, you know, three castes, one created via genetic manipulation, one the normal inhabitants, and the other regenetically modified to be the ultimate warriors, you know.
Yeah.
One took it too far, one took the wrong direction, one's a classic. See that, and see the how cows be formed. See the moderate Klingons, but see, well, what is this culture really about? You know, and not even leave Kronos. And then only at the end of season two do we see them say, right, we need the Federation, Federation's help for something. Because maybe we're dealing with the Tholians or the Gorn or something else, you know. Give us episodic, but give us season arc. And you know, use what you've laid, but reintegrate it. And if those things sound exciting to you guys, that's because I think they'd be great.
Yeah, it would be cool. It'd be cool. How about you, Dave?
I like all that a lot, except I would like to see Spock and Pike and maybe get a little bit of story with Pike and that going on. Like, a pipe dream for me would be, since they said they're going to Vulcan to get a new captain, I would love for them to go pick up T'Pol, and T'Pol to be the captain for Discovery, and then they can finish the temporal Cold War story arc that never got a proper resolution in Enterprise.
Hmm. That's interesting. Yeah, that would be interesting, something with the temporal Cold War. I was even thinking maybe the Enterprise comes back and look, all the things that just happened, that wasn't supposed to happen.
Yeah, and they get tied up in the temporal Cold War, and then they get lost in time, and that's why the spore drive never gets replicated, so we never hear about it again, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That would be interesting.
What about you, Aaron?
Deep in Star Trek.
Yeah, I would like to see, honestly, I was thinking, and I think I told you this, I think I was talking to you about this, Dave, was seeing Zachary Quinto reprise the role of Spock for this, because he ain't doing anything. I looked at his IMDb page. I mean, he's in a couple movies, but, you know, he's not going, setting the world on fire. So why not make him Spock? Because he looks like him, and he got, you know, he was taken under the wing of Nimoy. So I think we could see him there.
I'd absolutely love to see him reprise the role.
Yeah, yeah. It would be cool to see if, like, maybe there was, like, something with the Gorn hegemony empire thing. Maybe there was some, like, attack or something like that that they had helped quell. But more than anything, I want them to, like I said before, I want to see some more exploration and more real science. they just it really should be part of what Star Trek is. And I find it fascinating that this whole season really didn't touch on much of that at all. You know, even the science is a little, you know, a little woo-woo on certain points. So, yeah, but that's where I'm at. I'd like to see that.
And that's the thing. Like, season two has so much possible potential. It's just exciting to think about. And hopefully we'll get tidbits and have ideas where things might go if they leak any casting news or anything like that.
Although the joke is, you know, all the things we've said basically boil down to if they make the show more canon and use the Star Trek universe, it'll be a better show, you know?
Right.
That, there's so much there to use. Bring back, like you said, bring back the Gorn, the Tholians. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I was thinking too, is that it took to the last season, and everyone lost their shit when they saw Enterprise fly in. It's like, but this is a show about Discovery, so why are we excited about seeing Enterprise? I mean,
it's canon.
Well, it's because it's canon, but also because we know the Enterprise is fucking awesome, and we know so much about it. And Discovery has left us a little bit like, I don't know about you. I don't know.
Remember, it's also special because they're one of the 12 Constitution classes, the most capable, not to say advanced, most capable ships in the fleet. That's a big deal. You know, one of the 12 out there to do their mission specially, and still on par with the D7 10 years later. You know, they still struck fear in the Klingons and respect. 10 years later, they were very, very capable ships.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So, I don't know. I just, I thought it was odd that not that they used it, but that when we saw that, everyone was like, oh my God, it's the Enterprise. Okay, this is going to get good now. So I don't know. I mean, almost everybody was saying what we liked about 5 points was someone mentioned the Enterprise coming up, you know, as one of the things that we got excited about.
Well, I did. It's exciting.
It's very exciting.
Me too, but. So.
Yeah, and my kids who don't really watch Star Trek, my oldest son is like, hey, there's your Enterprise. That's awesome. They should redo the whole original series like that with new effects. And I'm like, oh my God. And my youngest son was like, hey, look, Dad, it's your Enterprise. You like it? Is it right? And he's like pointing out the banner on the side, the pennant. It's a little bit different. I'm like, yeah, it's, you know, it's good. And I'm up at my 60-inch TV with it freeze frame looking at the details.
Through that blue fog.
It brought excitement to the kids and stuff. And that meant a lot to me that they were like kind of hyped up for that. So.
Because they know you love it. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's cool.
Because did you know, guys, Stuart likes Star Trek?
What?
What?
No.
I thought we had him on here just to talk about pebbles.
Yeah.
They're minerals. Sorry.
Yeah, oh, well, it's going to be exciting to see where season two goes. I can't wait. It sucks that we have to wait so long that... To get this next season. It kind of blows my mind that it's going to take them that long.
But we did get confirmation. Filming is starting in April.
Yeah.
Yes.
Interesting. So scripts are written or being written right now. I mean, for them to start shooting in April. So they
need to have some episodes of Trek Yards to watch. Maybe get some ideas. And this podcast, of course.
Yeah. Like, I hope they listen to us. I know they listen to some other Star Trek podcasts. I don't know if they listen to ours, but I hope they do. I mean, and people who think we've been hating on it, it's like we don't hate it. We just want it to be the best it can be, the best it possibly can be. And you know, watching Trek Yards and seeing what you guys have been saying about Discovery, you guys are right in line most of the way where me and Aaron fall. So that's why I wanted to do the roundtable with you guys, because we all have like a similar mentality on how we treat Discovery. It's got its problems, and we address those, but it's also got such potential.
Well, I love hearing the alternate points of view, because obviously we are also in an echo chamber, as the internet kind of gives you, even if it's with like-minded people, which is kind of the weird thing. So it's great to have alternate perspectives. And as I've said, you know, call it the good, call it the bad, as long as you can justify your opinion in a nice way, then it's good to have that conversation.
Absolutely, right. Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. And I do think people who you know, love Discovery and hate Discovery, if they articulate, most of the time I say you have a valid point. I mean, sometimes I don't totally agree, but I mean, as long as they're not, like you were saying before, just they're just attacking you just because they don't agree with you. That's totally different. But, you know, there are reasons to look into certain aspects and say this could be better or this was really good. They did fantastic on here. So,
do you think we'll see the interior of the Enterprise next season?
Yes.
Yes.
Yep. Well,
yeah.
And I wish they won't.
That's unanimous.
I wish they won't, because they won't be able to do it right.
But the thing is, I kind of hope they do build sets for the Enterprise, but then they can just reuse them for Discovery, because we still haven't seen the real main engineering of Discovery.
That's good.
We still haven't seen, like, a rec room. We still haven't seen, like, a conference room. You know, there's lots of rooms we haven't seen. And then if they establish them on the Enterprise and just reuse the sets later on Discovery, because they'd be similar designs, I mean, for...
Well...
would they?
No.
Maybe. Okay. I mean, who knows? I mean, like, they used the TNG engine room in the TMP movies, so yeah, I mean...
They were both heavy cruisers in the same line of lineage. From a Discovery, it's a dedicated, designed and built spore drive ship.
Well, they could...
That's its purpose.
They could lightly redress them.
Well, you know what I mean? I mean, you don't put the same glove box in a Ferrari for a camper van. You know, different form, function, or different, you know, whatever.
But your saucer structure is the same. So, I mean, sure, you've got the hole. Well, you've got the hole in it. But I mean,
well, when you build things in a circle, it's three times the size, yeah. And yet almost all the surface area is filled with spore technology because only 132 crew, and yet the Enterprise can fit 400 people in a 1/3 the size thing. So no, most of Discovery is technology. In a very big area, so
you got to remember too that this is Pike's Enterprise. We got 230 crew, not 430.
So maybe it's spore technology. Maybe they have the spore drive because it's so few. That's the reason.
Maybe they just live comfortably, more comfortably in Pike's time, and they pack them in like sardines in Kirk's time.
I mean, have you seen Pike's quarters? They were great.
Doctors come and bring you whiskey. You can't argue with that.
Same in the JJ verse. So, yeah, go for it. Do it.
Yeah, I mean, I would just love to see some interior sets, some engine room, like because we haven't seen the real engine room of Discovery. We've seen like
the chief engineer,
or chamber A, or the chief engineer.
Where the hell is he?
I'm guessing they're just gonna throw that at Stamets because he's not jumping in the spore chamber anymore.
I see. Well, he's so special.
TNG didn't have a chief engineer for the first season or two either until Geordi got it. They kind of had that woman, and then they kind of
they had Argyle. Blood. Argyle was the chief engineer.
Yeah, but they made him into a sock. You've been demoted to sock.
No, Stamets can't fix a ship. He's a spore drive engineer botanist.
Yeah,
he's not capable of being chief engineer. I'm sorry.
I absolutely agree with that sentiment, but since he's an established character and they're not making him use the spore thing anymore, what use does he have?
Well, exactly. Yeah, what is his purpose now?
They're going to do with Geordi. Geordi drove the ship, and all of a sudden he was the engineer. So, I mean, Stamets drove the ship with a spore drive, and now he's the chief engineer.
He spoiled Dylan into space. He wanted promotion.
I don't know because I mean, if they're not using the spore drive anymore, Stamets' story is kind of ended. So
he could be head of stellar cartography. He knows the mycelia network. He's seen all the spaces. He's seen all the realities. He knows what's what.
He gets to be Harry Kim.
But does spore drive survive? I mean, that's the thing. That's the biggest thing I want to know. It's like, because we've never seen any kind of idea that this existed before.
It's a radical game changer. It changes everything.
Yeah. And Dave, you have your idea of Section 31 of that's how they get around so easily.
Well, that's what makes
that's interesting.
That would make the most sense to me, that the spore drive gets taken out of commission. It gets relegated to Section 31. Earth tardigrades are already microscopic, so Section 31 micros the technology so that it can be like a pill or like a small device in their pocket or something, and then they can just pop it to appear in Bashir's quarters for night calls, booty calls, or you know, or to switch places with people when you're getting ready to be disintegrated by Romulans, you know, because Sloane survived that, and it looked like he died.
Well, they said that was a transporter beam, but the problem is then that means that that Section 31 let every bad thing happen. You know, why didn't Section 31 guy, spore into the Borg cube, plant a bomb. You know, the problem is when you have a god technology, it ruins the game. You know, why didn't they go to Kronos and just kill Gowron when he started the war? Why didn't he go to Dominion Homeworld? I mean, you can't give anyone that sort of power, which is why Discovery is such a ridiculous ship, because it can literally go, at this point, with some planning, any place in the universe instantly, any point in time, potentially, any universe, if you can find the coordinates.
Yeah.
Or a combination of all three in one jump, as they did.
Yeah.
I did think that maybe what there was going to happen is that they were going to get lost in space and kind of
that
do
would have been
kind
great.
Of like a sliders kind of thing, going through alternate universes and all sorts.
Anthology, because suddenly becomes an anthology just for the nature of other universes. Yeah.
Or if they do the temporal Cold War thing and they get caught up in that, they have to jump through the different things of the temporal Cold War. That could have been. They could make it an anthology show that way, kind of.
That is so interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is really interesting. Yeah.
I'd love that so much, but I don't think they ever explained the way Sloane got around, because I think they said there was no ship and no transporter beam for Sloane just showing up on Deep Space Nine.
Cloaked ship, cloaked transporter. I mean, yeah.
But the spore drive would be so much fun. It would tie the two together.
He's too powerful, unless he like limited range. Like he has to be on a cloaked ship nearby, but he can spore anywhere within like a 1,000-kilometer range.
Sure,
that would make sense.
With the technology,
the energy from his own body, you know, because that if you're limiting it that small, only personal energy.
I mean that's a limitation of the micro technology, but it's a cool concept. And it'd be a cool way to bridge Discovery to something we know, and like, oh, that's how Sloane got around. That's really cool. You know,
then you ask the question: why didn't they upgrade that again and just win the Dominion War? You know, again, you're saying they let these things happen.
Oh, I mean, Section 31 does let things happen. They let the Klingons get way out of hand in this season, because Section 31 had a tease in Episode 3. We never saw them. It never came to fruition.
But we don't know what the other side has and what they're combating against. So there could be something even more insane what they have. Well, so
I don't know if the Klingons have like a Tel Shiar or Section 31.
They just go and kill people with bat-leths. They don't need anything else. Stabby stab.
If you don't agree with me, you get the bat-leth.
Yeah. No, but I'm
that's
just saying, like,
it'd
be cool. It'd be cool to see. Yeah, and the idea that if Enterprise needs Discovery's help, that must mean there's something that the Enterprise cannot do. So I'm thinking it has to do something with the spore drive,
or just plot convenience because lazy writing. Because
wouldn't it be cool too? Wouldn't it be cool too if the new captain of Discovery ends up being number one from Pike's ship?
Yep. Oh, that's why she left. Oh, Stuart, yes.
And they were on their way to Vulcan to pick somebody else up, and then she ends up taking Discovery for this mission, and then they just end up giving her the ship. That'd be really cool.
That could be a lot of fun. T'Pol could be a lot of fun, and someone who is Jeffrey Combs as a new character, that could be a lot of fun. I just want Jeffrey Combs back, please.
I agree.
Make him a Vulcan captain. I'll be happy. If they have to put a new character in command of Discovery, if it's not like number one or not T'Pol, Jeffrey Combs, just make a new character with him.
He's never played a human on Star Trek, so bring back Jeffrey Combs. Hashtag Jeffrey Combs for captain.
Except that fake human in Sisko's dream thing.
Yes.
Fake human.
That doesn't count.
It doesn't count.
No, it doesn't.
Ah, but man, I'd love to see Jeffrey Combs as captain.
Yes, I agree.
We just want to see more canon. And Jeffrey Combs is canon.
Yeah, Jeffrey Combs is canon, but he's just such a great actor. He played so many parts and so well.
Yeah. And that's canon with one end, guys. Pay attention.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
It's one of my pet peeves. Sorry.
I get that for sure. Well, thank you, Stuart and Samuel, for joining us for this fun deep dive into everything Star Trek and Discovery.
Well, it's nice to be less. It's nice to be less formal, because we're normally a bit more. You know, this is a bit more of a chit chat. We don't, you know, less trackyardy. It's nice.
Thank you guys for having us.
Oh man, we really enjoy you guys, and what you guys, your product that your show comes out is just it's phenomenal. Anybody who hasn't seen it, you better subscribe to their YouTube channel. It's awesome. I just love how you guys pore over the details over all sorts of, you know, the technical side of it, and also when you're going back at the show and you know thinking conjecture and putting it against canon and stuff like that. It's wonderful. So we, you know, me and Dave turned me on to you guys a while back, and you guys are great. So
thank you.
Yeah, you guys.
You're big into canon like I am. So I'm like, yes, you guys are going to know what's right and what's what. And I love that. So I love tuning into you guys.
Yeah. And we do it all for you guys. We put the time in because we want to bring this information to you, and, you know, new information from CG models, and Stuart bring all the information from FAST. I think that's why we do it for you guys.
Yeah,
definitely check them out. And we'd love to have you back for any other Star Trek discussions at some point in the future. That'd be a lot of fun to maybe be a little more focused than this wide, broad thing.
True, yeah, that'd be fun. We'll come back anytime, guys.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Well, where can we find you guys on social media for those who don't know?
You can check out trekyards.com. That's our website. Or you can head on over to YouTube and just type in Trekyards, all one word, and you'll find our multitude of episodes. We've got so many.
And pet peeve, Trekyards, only one capital, because it's a singular word, not Trek, capital, yards.
Mm. Yes.
One capital. Not two words.
So we should come back for an episode where we just talk about our pet peeves. That's what you should do.
Yeah, all the Trek pet peeves that you...
Trek?
Yeah. Oh, but buzzards. I don't like buzzards. The song. Like,
buzzard collectors.
Buzzard collectors.
What? Not a bird.
What about a buzzard flying in space?
What if it's a bird of prey?
Or is it a warbird?
Oh, yeah, that's true. Warbird.
Playing a warbird from Mo9. What?
They're not warbirds.
Well,
not really.
Sort of, but
no. Do a pet peeves, do like a worst of the worst again. Oh, those are fun episodes.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. So with us, you can find us online at Synthaholics.com. You can email us at Synthaholics@yahoo.com. Join the Facebook group. Join in the conversation at Facebook.com/group/Synthaholics. And also join Trekyards group, you know, Facebook.com/group/Trekyards. One word.
Word.
Right.
And hey, if you can, please go on Apple iTunes, rate and review us 5 stars preferably, and say something nice about us, because, you know, we'd say something nice about you. And if you have some
unless you
you have your own personal canon, if you have some money, please head over to Patreon.com/Synthaholics. Donate to us. It's a great way to keep support the show. And one last thing you can possibly do to support the show would be wonderful is tell a friend, tell your cousin, tell your grandma about our podcast, and tell about Trekyards as well. Yeah, go door to door and tell them all about us, because, you know, it's a great way, just word of mouth is a great way to support the show.
Absolutely. And Trekyards also has a Patreon. So if you're all in a charitable mood and want to check both our Patreons out, we would both be very appreciative of that.
Yes. Send your money.
Isn't it nice not to have to do the work, Samuel? They're doing all the work for us here.
Just sitting back and enjoying.
That's right.
Absolutely. Since we're hosting the show, we're doing the groundwork for everybody here. So yeah, definitely check us out, listen to our show, check it, Trekyards. They do phenomenal work, and they drop something every single day. I can't comprehend the amount of work that goes into that.
We did. Discovery's finished. We're gonna relax a little bit more.
Take a little bit of a break.
Good
quality,
God.
Not
go
a couple
to
times a week now. Couple times a week now, yeah.
But it has been daily, and it blows my mind. Putting out 2 videos and a podcast a week blow my mind. So props to you guys for all the work that you've done over the Discovery's run.
Absolutely you guys are great.
Well, thank you again for joining us, and thank you all those listening for listening. Thank you. Have a great night. Live long and prosper, one and all.
Bye, guys. We laugh and we'll bullshit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I